Coming up on this episode of The Doctor's Pharmacy.
On today's podcast, we're going to dive deep into Lewy body dementia, low thyroid function, leaky gut, H. pylori, and lots more. So stay tuned. Hey everyone, it's Dr. Mark. As a busy doctor with multiple jobs, I'm all about tools that make my life simpler. And since testing is something I rely on to help almost all my patients, I was really excited to learn about Rupa Health. Hormones, organic acids, nutrient levels, inflammatory factors, and gut bacteria are just some of the many things I look at to find the most effective path to optimal health for my patients. But that means I'm placing orders through multiple labs, which is just an overall pain. And it also makes keeping track of results more difficult for me and my patients and other doctors. Rupa Health has totally changed that. They've made functional medicine testing simpler and more convenient than ever so that practitioners like me can focus on helping their patients. With Rupa Health, functional medicine practitioners can access more than 2,000 specialty lab tests from over 20 labs like Dutch, Vibrant America, Genova, Great Plains, and more. It's 90% faster, letting you simplify the process of getting the functional tests you need and providing a noticeably better patient experience. This is really a very much needed option in the functional medicine space that I'm so excited about. You can check out a free live demo and a Q&A or create an account at rupahealth.com. That's rupahealth.com. Now, something I get more and more excited about every year is personalized medicine. Now, when I began practicing functional medicine over 20 years ago, it was clear to me we have to look at how unique each body is. Now with technology advancing in amazing ways, we can truly take that concept to the next level. Like one of the tools that I recently discovered that can help us all do this from home is Inside Tracker. Founded in 2009 by top scientists in aging, genetics, and biometric data from MIT, Tufts, and Harvard, Inside Tracker is a personalized health and wellness platform like no other. It's purpose-built to help you live a longer, more productive life. Their cutting-edge technology analyzes your blood, DNA, your lifestyle to give you highly personalized recommendations. Then, using the app, you can track your progress every day. Inside Tracker tells you what to do and why, so your health goals are clear and actionable, and most importantly, based on exactly what your body needs. And now you can connect Inside Tracker with your Apple Watch to unlock deeper, more precise insights into your health. With real-time exercise, resting heart rate, and sleep data synced with your Inside Tracker plan, you can truly wear your health on your sleeve. My team took Inside Tracker for a spin and really loved it. They discovered some important things about their health that led them to stop procrastinating when it comes to certain parts of their health, like, for example, finally taking a vitamin D supplement after seeing they were deficient, or eating more iron-rich foods due to low ferritin and hemoglobin, and making an effort to embrace stress reduction techniques after seeing high cortisol levels. Now, health is not black and white. Your wellness plan shouldn't be either. If you're curious about getting your own health program dialed in to your unique needs, I highly recommend checking out Inside Tracker. Right now, they're offering my community 20% off at insidetracker.com/Dr. Hyman. That's insidetracker.com/Dr. Hyman. That's me, Dr. Hyman. And you'll see the discount code in your cart. Now let's get back to this week's episode of The Doctor's Pharmacy. Hey everybody, it's Dr. Mark Hyman. Welcome to a new series on The Doctor's Pharmacy called Masterclass, where we dive deep into popular health topics, including inflammation, autoimmune disease, brain health, sleep, blood sugar, and lots more. And today I'm joined by my friend, my business partner, and the host of the Drew Pro podcast, Drew Pro himself, and we're so excited to do something really different and fun, which is we're answering community questions that you've submitted via a new video app called HiHo. You can follow me on HiHo and submit your questions there, and you might see them on the podcast. So today we have a wide variety of questions, and I'm going to turn it right over to Drew.
Mark, a pleasure to be here. Excited to jump into all these great questions. And by the way, if you don't know about HiHo, you can find the link in the show notes. It's a great place to ask questions to Dr. Hyman. And we're going to be doing a lot of these regularly. And we'll use your questions as an opportunity for Mark to not only answer, but a little bit of an opportunity for me, a seasoned interviewer, to try to pull up the deep, dark gems that Mark has on all these incredible topics.
So we can all dark? Learn. Are they light?
You know what? I don't even know why I said dark. dark as in, I just think I meant deep. Yeah, these and golden deep, gems, deep, that's a better word.
Deep recesses of my mind somewhere. Someone once said I'm like a jukebox. You put in a quarter and out comes anything you want.
I should have just kept it to that. You're a jukebox. So Mark, we're about to put in a quarter with the first question that we have from Gary in your community who asks about Lewy body dementia. And we're going to tee up his video clip over here.
My mother passed from Lewy body dementia, as did my comedy and adult childhood idol, Robin Williams, who was suffering when he passed. I'd like to know everything you know. Are there any successful treatments? Have people rebounded? Is there any potential cures?
Well, Gary, thank you so much for that question. And sadly, I've had a lot of opportunity to treat Lewy body patients. But the good news is there's something you can do about it. And Lewy body, for those people who don't know what it is a form of dementia that's sort of a combo between Parkinson's and Alzheimer's. So it's like dementia with a lot of motor features. So it affects this part of the brain called the basal ganglia, which controls motor function, but also has far-reaching effects throughout the brain. And, you know, when we talk about dementia, there's no such thing as dementia. There are dementias. And they're all different and they have different causes. Even, for example, Alzheimer's may have very different causes. Dale Bredesen, we've had on the podcast, has talked a lot about the various causes, whether it's inflammatory triggers, mold, toxins, Lyme, blood sugar issues, insulin, nutritional deficiencies, hormonal dysregulation. There's all these things that drive brain dysfunction. And so there's dementia that's classified as Alzheimer's, dementia that's Lewy body, dementia that's we call vascular dementia from little mini strokes. At the end of the day, we have to think broadly about what the root causes are. So while on the pathology, it may look the same. In other words, when you take someone's brain, you cut it open after they die, and you look at it, you're going to see the same pattern of cellular dysfunction and the same kinds of pathology on the slides amongst all the people with Lewy body or amongst all the people with Alzheimer's or amongst all the people with vascular dementia. But that doesn't mean the causes are the same. So, you know, while I've seeing patients with Lewy body, they're different from each other. And I'm just recalling one in particular who was quite disabled, who I got pretty late in the process. And when the functional medicine approach, even if I've never seen a case of this particular disease before, I know what to do because I'm not treating the disease. I'm treating the body. I'm treating the system. I'm creating health and I'm removing all the impediments to health and adding in all the ingredients for health. And when I do that, the body's innate healing system starts to activate. It starts to repair and start to renew and heal. And it's actually shocking to me, you know, because I'm so brainwashed still by medical school. I'm so brainwashed to think that, oh, this is impossible. Even though I kind of know after 30 years of practicing functional medicine that it is, I'm still sort of shocked when I try this stuff and it actually works. And I'll just sort of share a case of a patient that'll sort of help you illustrate what we can do and what we did find and what actually matters. This patient was about 85 years old, a woman, who really was struggling. And when she was brought to me, she was unable to walk. She was in a wheelchair because of the motor dysfunction. She came to my office. We had to have three people pick her up. And she was a little lady. We had three people literally pick her up to stand on the scale to weigh her. And she was unable to run her business affairs. She had really a very large, successful business and was on the board and was heavily involved and was just no longer functioning. She couldn't go out anymore. She couldn't socialize anymore. She was really homebound and wheelchair ridden. Wheelchair bound. And she was referred to me by a friend and her son and her and I talked for a bit. And she really had trouble speaking. She had trouble talking because of the motor effects. And I was like, well, gosh, I don't know if there's anything I can do, but let's take a look. So it turned out, even though she was thin, she was diabetic and her blood sugar was very poorly controlled because she ate a lot of carbohydrates. So she may not have been overweight, but she was over fat and under lean. In other words, she was what we call metabolically obese normal weight. She was thin on the outside, but fat on the inside. And all the metabolic parameters around blood sugar were just way off. And she had also a lot of gut issues and had never really had normal bowel movements, was severely constipated, uses colonics and enemas and laxatives for years and years and years and years. And then she had all these weird other things. She had all these migratory rashes all over her body, which were yeast infections on her skin, under her breasts and everywhere. And she kept getting these shots from her doctor for energy, which were steroid shots, which is, I think, criminal. Yes, it's great to have if you're climbing Mount Everest and you're going to die, you take a steroid shot, like Decadron, adrenaline shot, so you can get off the mountain. But it's not meant to be used for people who are just a little tired. It's basically the stress hormone. and it causes the brain to shrink. It causes diabetes. It causes all kinds of muscle wasting, hormonal dysregulation, low growth hormone. I mean, it's just a disaster to be taking on a regular basis. So this was contributing to her problem. And she also was really significantly nutritionally deficient in many, many nutrients, including B12, folate, B6. So she had tremendous gut issues. She had diabetes, and she had significant nutritional deficiencies and hormonal dysfunction. And so I kind of looked at the whole picture and I said, well, let's just start to rebuild your system from the ground up. So the first thing we did was clean up her gut. And it turned out she had tremendous amounts of yeast from all the steroids and antibiotics she'd been on. She was severely constipated, which can go along with yeast overgrowth, or what we call SIFO, small intestinal fungal overgrowth, which is similar to SIBO, which is small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. She was bloated, distended, uncomfortable. And so we got her gut normalized. I gave her an antifungal, I gave her probiotics, I gave her a whole gut repair program, gave her magnesium, I took away all the laxatives and got her on MCT oil, vitamin C, magnesium, which really helped bowel movements. And so she started normalizing her gut, which is great. And then we actually also addressed the blood sugar. So we put her on a modified ketogenic diet, extremely low carbohydrate, higher in fats. And the brain loves this. And particularly in Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, there's really good data showing that a ketogenic diet can be really helpful symptomatically. And I've had many other patients with Alzheimer's. When they get pretty bad, I'll often try a ketogenic diet when I see them slipping. And it's remarkable. It's like the light bulb goes on in their brain, because the brain works much better on fat than sugar, which kind of contradicts everything I learned in medical school, which is that your brain takes up 25% of your energy requirements as glucose, sugar. So you need sugar for your brain. Actually, sugar is poison for your brain. Yes, you need energy for your brain, but that energy can be obtained through a very low glycemic diet, and particularly through ketones, which are much more efficient and cleaner burning fuel than sugar, and can be derived from things like MCT oil, which is a great source of fat that actually turns into ketones in the body and helps mitochondrial function. The other part of dementia, Parkinson's in particular, and Lewy body, is that it's a mitochondrial problem, which is an energy problem. So there's an energy deficit inside the cells, which makes it difficult to move and think and do all the things we want to do. So I basically cleaned up her gut. I got her diet sorted to be extremely low glycemic, full of phytochemicals, super high in fat, very low sugar, starch, and her blood sugar normalized, her gut normalized. And then I started upregulating some of these B vitamin pathways that have to do with brain chemistry that can be contributing to dementia, like B12 deficiency. She was on acid blockers, all kinds of drugs I had to take her off of. These people are on polypharmacy. I once visited a patient at home, was a mother of a friend, another patient, and she was on 22 different prescription drugs, which is terrifying. And all the drug interactions and all the side effects. And I mean, I don't even know how that happens. It's like you see one doctor, they give you a drug, you see another doctor, they give you a drug, and nobody's talking to anybody else. And it's kind of the failure of modern medicine. And so I clean up her gut. I got her blood sugar under control. I optimized her pathways around methylation, B vitamin status. And I also gave her some hormonal support. Her thyroid was off. Her sex hormones were low. So I basically just kind of tuned her up. I just optimized her systems from a functional medicine perspective. And I didn't know what would happen. I thought, oh, well, hopefully she'll feel better. At least she'll be going to the bathroom and her blood sugar is controlled. But it was a miracle, literally a miracle, Drew. I went to visit her at her apartment in New York. Made a house call, and I was shocked. She literally got up out of her wheelchair and she walked down the hall unassisted. And I was like, holy cow. Her verbal fluency increased. She was able to get back and do her business. She recorded another album. She wrote a book. It was like, what happened to her? And I really learned so much from this case, because just by applying these foundational principles about restoring health in the gut, in hormones, in blood sugar, in mitochondria, and also optimizing these pathways around biochemistry that are so important for brain function that have to do with methylation, sulfation, detoxification, she really improved so dramatically. And, you know, I wouldn't have thought this was possible, but the good thing about her was that she had a team. So she had a full-time nurse 24/7. She had somebody cooking for her. She could afford what I was asking her to do and had the setup to do it at home. And by simply following the principles, and by the way, like, you know, Benjamin Franklin said it very well, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. So, you know, an ounce of prevention is early on, you don't have to do much to stay healthy. But if you're really, really sick, you need a pound of cure. And so she was kind of needing the pound of cure. So it was a very intensive program, but she did it. And the results were really remarkable. And I think that, you know, people out there listening need to be aware that while you were seeing rising case of dementia and Parkinson's and Lewy body, and it seems hopeless right now because traditional medicine has just failed at this. There's been, I think, over $2 billion of studies, over 400 clinical trials studying all sorts of drug interventions, and every single one of them has failed. Even the new drug that, quote, got approved is a joke. It's super expensive. It doesn't really make that much difference. It's like incremental, right? So, oh, I'm going to keep you out of the nursing home an extra 3 months. That's a blockbuster drug. No, it's terrible. It's like, that's not a metric. So the metric is, can you get back to life? Can you do the things you like to do? Can you socialize? Can you, you know, walk? Can you talk? Can you think? Can you be engaged in your life in a meaningful way? And that's the result she got. And I think, you know, people listening might think, oh God, that's crazy, Dr. Hyman. That can't be true. That's just an anecdote. Where's the science? Where's the proof? Blah, blah, blah. And I would just say to you, you know, if there's one case like this, then doesn't that merit a lot of investigation? We should be literally pouring billions of dollars of federal money into these kinds of research projects. And yet it doesn't get funded because like, oh, we have to study everything separately. Well, let's just study blood sugar. Okay, let's just treat mitochondria. No, let's just treat the gut. No, let's just give the B vitamins. No, let's just do this one thing. And I'm like, no, the body is a system. If you want to grow a plant, you know, well, I'm just going to give it sunlight, but no soil or water. Or I'm just going to give it soil, but no water or sunlight. I'm like, no, you need all the things that are required for health. It's like, well, let's just see what works. Water is good for you. So we're just gonna have you drink water for a year and see what happens. Well, you'll die. You know, like, okay, we're just gonna, eating is good. Vegetables are good for you. So all you're gonna do is eat vegetables, but you can't drink water. Well, you're gonna die. So like, we have to understand that the body is an ecosystem, and that's what functional medicine is all about. It's about helping restore the ecosystem of the body to a more balanced state and optimizing the functional systems that determine our health. So if you're out there and you have dementia, or you have someone with dementia in your family, or Lewy body or Parkinson's, it's a lot of work, but it can be dealt with more effectively. And it's one of the most satisfying parts of my practice because people get their life back.
So many layers there, Mark. I have 1,000 follow-up questions for you.
Okay, go
right into it. So number one, thank you for sharing that story. I hadn't heard that one. And that was a really beautiful and touching story. So a few themes that I want to get a chance to pull back from. Number one, you mentioned Dale Bredesen. He's been on your podcast before. Mm. We've had many conversations with him. Mm. He has a network called Recode, I believe, where he has a whole list of practitioners all around the country that are trained in his protocol. Is that one step? If somebody is in this position or has been diagnosed early, should they consider, you know, going to them? Obviously, we don't have any formal affiliation besides being a fan, right? Just want to make that clear for everybody. But is that one step to go find the right practitioner?
For sure, for sure. So Dale is an amazing guy. He's a research neurologist. So he's a neuroscientist who worked at the Buck Institute on Aging and was an academic scientist. And his wife was doctor as well, but she was a functional medicine doctor, and she was always pushing him a little bit. And I think my book Ultra Mind Solution came out in 2009, and he read the book, and he, through reading the book, realized that the things that I was observing clinically and the results I was getting clinically were the things that he was seeing in the laboratory on the bench that hadn't quite reached clinical practice yet, but actually it had through functional medicine. And that led him down this path of rethinking everything he's doing and looking as a neurologist, as an Alzheimer's expert, as a dementia expert, looking at these principles and starting to apply them. And so he started to apply them in a kind of a loose way, and he started seeing these results. And after patient, he got very serious about it. And he's really taken this work and created not just the books he's written, including the last one, I think the first survivors. I think there's like, I mean, people
first
know there's
survivors
breast
of Alzheimer's.
Cancer.
Yeah.
Right. That's first, there's survivors of cancer. There's survivors of heart attacks, but who's a survivor of Alzheimer's? So, well, there are survivors now. And I've had many of them in my practice. So he basically took that science and combined it with the principles of functional medicine and created a scalable model online and in person to find out what's going on with you. And it's called Recode. So, you know, we might have a few differences around the edges here and there, but we're like 98% aligned. And I think he's done a great job of making this widespread and accessible. And to just hear him talk and hear him share the stories. And actually, there's a documentary that they were making years ago. I saw it. I don't know what happened to it, but it really was about all these Alzheimer's survivors and dementia survivors. And it's like, okay, well, if that's true, then you know, why aren't we actually doing this at scale? And it's just like everything else. I mean, we know the cure for diabetes is better food. And that's not a controversial idea. And yet insurance doesn't pay for it. Doctors don't know what to do with the information and they just keep prescribing drugs. So, you know, we're in the same situation with pretty much everything else that works in medicine that isn't mainstream. It's just marginalized because of perverse financial incentives, because you know, doctors don't understand it, because the research infrastructure doesn't fund the kinds of research that shows how systems approaches work. They're very much reductionist. So let's look at this one drug for this one pathway, for this one disease, and see if it works when we keep everything else normal. But that's just not how our bodies work.
That's a big part of this podcast and the work that you do, even separate from, you know, you have a nonprofit that does advocacy work and trying to lobby Congress, FoodFix, foodfix.org, if people want to check it out. But I would say that this podcast that you've created is also advocacy work, because how change happens in society is by the spread of ideas. So somebody who's a research assistant somewhere and part of a grant application team hears a podcast because their sister or mother is suffering from something. And all of a sudden, it puts a little seed in their head that there's a different approach. They get excited. They talk to their, you know, manager at, you know, at their research clinic or university. They start to say, maybe there's something that's there. And that's how momentum gets started. Or a doctor's listening here and they're treating a high profile patient. That patient decides to start talking about your work or how they've been influenced by the principles of functional medicine. And momentum builds momentum. So a big part of this is just spreading enough education so people get excited enough to want to look. Because if you try to go direct to the source and convince people, it goes back to that standard Max Planck quote that people know so well. You know, changes in medicine happen one funeral at a time. Well, I think he said actually, science, but changes in science and medicine happen one funeral at a time.
Yeah. He said basically the quote is, you know, science doesn't advance by convincing your opponents and helping them see the light, but because they eventually die and a new generation grows up that's familiar with it. That's actually the quote, but it's basically one funeral at a time.
Yeah, one funeral at a time. And it was funny because, you know, I know you're studying longevity. Elon Musk was interviewed a couple of weeks ago, and he was like, the person was asking him, you know, all your friends, or your contemporaries, Jeff Bezos and this person, all the billionaires are exploring longevity and they're putting hundreds of millions of dollars in the space. Why are you not? And he said, you know, the hardest thing that we have right now is that society actually progresses because the old guard dies and then a new generation comes in with a new approach. And I don't know if we want a bunch of people living a long time who have old ideas, they're going to end up suppressing everybody else. I thought that was an interesting take on the whole situation.
I take that personally, actually. I don't want to be sent out to pasture. I got a lot of burning gifts still, so I'm never going to call it quits.
Please
but I get it. I get, you know, it's interesting. You know, I don't think age is necessarily a factor. It's mindset. And that
mindset, 100%.
You know, when I was at Cleveland Clinic, they were doctors in their 70s and older who were extremely open and curious and really connected to functional medicine. And then there were younger doctors who weren't. And it, you know, there was just an ossified mindset among certain people. And it's usually out of ignorance or fear. And people don't necessarily know, or they're unfamiliar with it, and so I don't know if age is really the determinant. It's more.
I'm going on record. I'm not an ageist. I have nothing against anybody at any age, both younger or older. This is really about having a youthful mind at any age. Youthful mind, and a youthful mind is an open mind. It's a mind that wants to learn. It's a mind that's open to the idea that we're going to change our opinions sometimes. And that's actually how we get better. And if you look back at key moments in your life, those key moments of either really good things or really often challenging things, they kind of, if you leaned into the lesson, they opened your mind a little bit and you saw things in a different perspective. So,
absolutely. No, this reminds me of a Groucho Marx quote. He said, be open-minded, but not so open-minded that your brains fall out. So I think having a good skeptical, critical mind is important, but also being open to exploring ideas that might be unfamiliar or may seem ludicrous, but actually turn out to be right. You know, and I'm researching my book on longevity, I actually sort of talking about this whole idea of the microbiome and how the microbiome plays such a huge role in all disease, even aging. And I was referencing the work of Eli Metchnikoff, who won the Nobel Prize in the early 1900s for the discovery of macrophages, which are a type of white blood cell. But he also had this theory that disease was caused by imbalances in the gut, and that that was driving immune problems and inflammation and heart disease. And he was initially sort of, you know, respected because he was a Nobel Prize winner, but eventually was ridiculed for his work, and people pretty much thought he was crazy. And yet now, 100 years later, they're like, oh yeah, the microbiome, it's connected to everything. You know, so it's, you know, it takes 100 years, 120 years sometimes to figure shit out.
A great reminder. And still, nonetheless, we have to track on and keep on moving and push in whatever way. If we're a drop in the ocean, let's be the best drop that we possibly can be.
Hey everyone, it's Dr. Mark Hyman. When I get dressed in the morning, I want to feel comfortable and ready for the whole day, from my meditation and workout to grabbing lunch or going to a meeting, which is why I'm obsessed with Vuori. Ever since I tried Vuori's clothes on, I've been hooked, and I literally have not wanted to wear anything else. They're that comfortable. I've turned so many of my friends onto Vuori, and now my team is hooked too. The women's performance jogger has become a staff favorite because they are super soft and come in a ton of different colors. They also have pockets, which is a huge bonus and makes it easier to listen to your favorite podcast like this one. My team has also been telling me how much they love the women daily leggings made with Vuori's special wicking smoothing fabric. A few women on my team have even gotten multiple colors so they can wear them every day for yoga, cycling, running, and anything else. Aside from the fact that I love their products, I feel good supporting Vuori because they believe in ethical manufacturing, community initiatives, and sustainability. They even offset 100% of their carbon footprint, and they're committed to using 80% sustainable materials. Vuori is an investment in your happiness. Right now, they're offering my community 20% off your first purchase at vuoriclothing.com/pharmacies. That's Vuori, V-U-O-R-I, clothing.com/pharmacy, F-A-R-M-A-C-Y. You'll also get free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Check out vuoriclothing.com/pharmacy, and you'll see why my team and I love their stuff so much. Now let's get back to this week's episode of The Doctor's Pharmacy.
Mark, a couple other clarifying points on your answer back to Gary, which was really robust. You know, you talk about the ketogenic diet, and a lot of people think immediately, you know, bacon, eggs, and a ton of red meat. But really what you're talking about with keto is much different. Can you just clarify with that and how you've adopted keto into being something that is not all the detrimental things that come from missing key elements?
Yeah, I mean, I think people misunderstand keto. For example, it's not a high protein diet at all. It's actually moderate protein, high fat, low carbs. And you know, what's fascinating is the this book I read years ago called Undaunted Courage about the Lewis and Clark expedition. The food that they used to cross America and discover America in the early 1800s, sent out way by Thomas Jefferson to see what was out there and go west, was pemmican, which is a Native American food that's made up of mostly fat. It's rendered bison fat and a little bit of protein, bison meat, and berries. So it's basically like 70% fat, 20-something percent protein, and the rest is small amounts of berries and carbohydrate.
And wait, quick question, like, how are they eating that? Is it all blended together? Like, how do all those
They make a bar. They make a bar. It's like a bar. It was the original protein bar.
I have your next business idea. You should re-release this protein.
Well, actually, it's funny because I just was in Antarctica, and I met this incredible man who's coming on the podcast, Colin O'Brady, who literally summited every mountain in the world at the top peak on every continent, I think in like 100 days. And he literally skied across the South Pole, across Antarctica, with pulling a sled behind him with all his gear. And he literally came up with these bars that were like the same kind of idea, very high fat, these kind of similar pemmican bars. So those are ketogenic, and it doesn't have to be unhealthy. So the typical view of ketogenic is it's like saturated fat and butter and cream and eggs and bacon. But no, it doesn't have to be that. It should be a very high plant-rich diet with lots of good fats, avocados, olive oil, nuts and seeds. And some saturated fat actually can be good for some people. For some others, it may not. And we've talked about this in the podcast. People like me, who are thin and lean athletic, often have a paradoxical reaction with saturated fat where they actually get a worsening of their cholesterol. Whereas other patients who are very overweight and inflamed and diabetic, they do amazing. Like the people in the Virta Health studies where they were literally reversed 60% of the diabetics, type 2 advanced to type 2 diabetes, people on insulin, on lots of drugs, completely reversed it with a ketogenic diet. So it really, it depends on the person. And I think you can eat a very healthy ketogenic diet that's full of colorful plant foods, that's full of good fats, that has moderate protein, that's healthy protein, and then you can do very well with it, and it can be a very health-promoting diet. The real question is, do you stay on it all the time? And I think we haven't really come up with the answer yet. There's a whole concept of cyclical keto, which involves going on and off it. Yesterday, we did grand rounds at Cleveland Clinic with Dr. Walter Longo, who's been on the podcast, who's studying the effects of a fasting mimicking diet, where he talks about these periodic cyclical stresses where you eat like you're starving. So that he does it with a very low calorie diet, 800 calories a day. But it also can be accomplished with ketogenic diets that you go on and off of. So we're still kind of learning about this. I just saw a New England Journal paper pop today. I'm going to not to read it yet, on time-restricted eating and weight loss. So we're still doing a lot of research, learning about this. But I do think that it's probably not good to be on all the time, but it can be very therapeutic and it can be used in certain cases. Cancer, for example, they're using ketogenic diets and curing stage 4 melanoma and pancreatic cancer, which are incurable diseases before now. And they're using it for brain tumors like glioblastoma, for Alzheimer's, for autism, for Parkinson's, for diabetes, for people with seizure disorders. In fact, that was the first medical use of a ketogenic diet when nothing else works. And this is part of what I learned in medical school. It wasn't a kind of a new fad. The discovery was that these kids who were on a ketogenic diet, when no seizure medication would work, would stop their seizures by eating a ketogenic diet because the brain does much better on fat and it's not so irritable and inflamed.
That's great. And I think one of the key themes, in addition to clarifying that, is really we're talking about a massive reduction in sugar, which is primarily coming from all these refined carbohydrates. And I'm guessing that your patient that you were talking about before, a good chunk of her diet, in addition to all of the things that she was dealing with, the gut issues, et cetera, was probably heavily reliant on a lot of these processed carbohydrates.
Yeah, I mean, she was eating a lot of rice and sugar and sweets. It's like, you know, not exactly good for the brain. And I think, you know, even... we're going to have this person on the podcast. I'm very curious to hear what she has to say, but there's a new book coming out in June 2022 called The Great Plant-Based Con, which sort of kind of takes apart a lot of the sort of vegan ideology and challenges a lot of the science. So I don't know what it says yet, but I'm very curious about it. And I kind of got a whiff of what it's about, and I'm going to have a look through it, and we're going to have an interesting conversation about it. But I just think we have to be really smart about our diet and personalize it. It has to be focused on quality. It has to be focused on food as medicine. It has to be personalized in a way to match the issues that you're struggling with or just for promotion of your health. So that's really why I wrote Food, What the Heck Should I Eat and the Vegan Diet, because I wanted to have a place where people can go and find a coherent view of an inclusive way of eating that actually also promotes health.
Okay, before we go into the next question, last final question off of what Gary was saying, he mentioned Robin Williams. Were you a Robin Williams fan? And
heck yes.
Yeah, anything that you want to mention about?
Mork and Mindy, yes. Actually, I met his son not too long ago. And
he's launched a new supplement company, right?
Yeah. And he's actually interesting. I think he works with another friend of mine. And it was heartbreaking because I don't know if you all saw the movie, there was a documentary on it. And it broke my heart because I feel like he didn't have to suffer. There was a way out. He just didn't know about it. And nobody around him knew about it. It just makes me angry, honestly, Drew. And I talked to my daughter who's in medical school right now, and she has a friend who's in medical school with her, and she's got all these inflammatory, weird autoimmune symptoms, and she's been to doctor after doctor, specialist after specialist, and she's still miserable, and nobody can give her answers, and they don't know where to look, they don't know what to do. And I'm like, well, this is not hard to solve. I mean, there are root causes of inflammation in the body that link to autoimmune disease and all the symptoms she's having, and you just need to go through them. It's not that hard. It's toxins, allergens, microbes, infections like ticks, microbiome, diet, stress. I mean, it's a short list of things. And as a functional medicine doctor, my job is to be a detective and to find out what's at the root of the problem and not just cover over the symptoms.
Yeah. And the last note that I'll mention about that, you know, Robin Williams, all the resources in the world, right? A well-off individual from well-deserved, a lifelong career of making people laugh and smile and cry and all those things. So he had resources financially, and still yet even, and the patient that you mentioned, you know, luckily she got connected to you and the Ultra Wellness Center, but so many people, even with resources, struggle to get the right care. No. And if you're lucky enough to have resources, and most people in the world are not, that's why it's even more important to go back to your original statement, which is about prevention. If we can think about these things, if we can integrate them and not wait till we get sick, we don't have to hope and wish that even if you have the education, you need a little bit of a nest egg to even sometimes pursue these things. We're not going to lie. Mm-hmm. It's expensive sometimes, right? You were mentioning she had a cook, you know, functional medicine test, other things. So prevention, 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 practicing these things now so we don't end up in that position in the future.
I mean, that's the problem, Drew, is that we don't get taught how our bodies work. We don't get taught how to create health. We don't get taught the practices and tools that are easily available to all of us, that are inexpensive and accessible, that we can use every single day to maintain our health. And you know, I've learned more and more as I've been doing this work for decades, and I keep improving and I keep getting better and I keep fine-tuning myself. And I use myself as sort of a guinea pig. But it's really amazing to see, you know, now I'm 62, and I feel stronger, healthier, younger than I did at 42. And I, even pictures, when you look at me, pictures back then, I look younger and better now, which doesn't even make any sense because it was 20 years ago, but that's possible. I mean, I have a few more gray hairs, but you know, that's from all the hard work.
All right, Mark, we're going to tee up the next question.
Mark, I'm a huge fan. Thanks for doing this. My question is, what is it about fried foods, even if you're just frying them at home, what is it about them that makes them so harmful to the internals of a human?
Eric, thanks for that question. You know, I like French fries like everybody else, but there's a problem when you deep fry foods, and it has to do with multiple changes that happen to the fats, to the sugars, and the proteins in the food you're cooking. So let's just sort of start, let's say, with French fries, because that's something that is probably the most common fried food that people eat. It's probably, I think it's, there's like five top vegetables. It's potatoes are one of them, and it's in the form of French fries. So literally it's, it's one of the most ubiquitous foods we eat. And French fries are delicious, right? But they're crunchy, but they're made from starch. And there's also proteins in the potatoes. And when you deep fry them, they form something called acrylamide. Acrylamide is a carcinogenic toxin that forms from the combination of these sugars and proteins and fats fried at a high temperature. So it's really, really dangerous. And yet it's in all fried foods. The other thing that happens is, you know, we've changed the fat we use to use highly oxidized fat. So before, and there's a great Malcolm Gladwell podcast about this, about why McDonald's French fries used to taste better, is because they fried them in beef tallow. Tallow is beef fat, like lard, right? Except from a cow. And that's what they used to fry the McDonald's French fries. And when we you know, when we used to make pie crusts, we use lard. So we used solid animal fats for frying, which are much more stable, less oxidizable, and much safer to use for high temperature cooking. But now, then we switched, by the way, to partially hydrogenated fats or trans fats, which was a disaster, which killed literally hundreds of millions of people, 100,000 millions of people over the years, been ruled not as safe to eat by the FDA, although it's still everywhere. I mean, I went into the supermarket the other day and I saw Crisco and all the hydrogenated fat products. I'm like, what is it still doing here? In 2015, 7 years ago, the government said we shouldn't be eating this. It's not safe. And yet they've given the food industry a long runway and a lot of loopholes to keep selling this stuff. So that was bad. And then they switched to refined vegetable oils or seed and bean oils, which are also extremely unstable. They're polyunsaturated fats. And under high temperature, they oxidize. Now, what is oxidation? Well, that's the process of fats going rancid, or your apple turning brown that's left out in the air, your avocado turning brown, or your skin wrinkling. That's oxidation. And when that happens, It creates a cascade of effects inside your body that creates inflammation, damages your tissues. And in fact, you know, your cholesterol is really not a problem unless there's oxidized cholesterol in your blood. So if you want to cause heart attacks and all the downstream effects of metabolic diseases, you know, eat fried food. And what was really interesting was a study that came out that a single fast food meal with fried foods had immediate effects on your arteries, causing them to stiffen and harden and reduce blood flow. So we really need to be smart about what we're eating. Do I ever eat a French fry? Yes. But I really don't make it a habit, and it has to be a very special French fry. And if you want to, you know, make French fries, you could bake them in the oven. You can have sweet potato fries and bake. There's a lot of ways to do it that are less harmful. But I think it's important. Another thing is air fryers. I've never really used one of those. I mean, I don't know how it's worked, but it seems like a good idea. I don't know if you still get the problem, because what happens is you also get advanced glycation end products, which are just damaged proteins. It's like creme brulee, the crispy thing on top, or the crust of a bread, or a crispy skin. It's proteins and sugars interacting to form these products called AGEs, or advanced glycation end products. And they bind to these receptors on your cell called RAGEs. So we're raging or aging, literally. I think it was a smart acronym. And that creates inflammation through the body, aging, and basically cellular destruction. So it's really important to limit your intake of these foods as much as possible. And I like crispy this and that, like the next person, but I really try not to eat it.
Yeah, that's great, Mark. I'll add in a couple things to that. I have used an air fryer, and I know for a lot of people who do enjoy fried foods, immediate easy step is switch to an air fryer. You know, don't be deep frying and other things. Even sometimes people would go out, and a lot of people who say, well, I'll only have like fries on the weekend or fried food on the weekend, say, well, get an air fryer at home, because that's going to be better at least. But I haven't seen the deep studies, or I don't know if anybody's done it, to know, like you said, is it that much better? But I can tell you that fried food is my kryptonite. And I feel like I have like a stealth virus. You know, I've talked about it with a few functional medicine doctors. Maybe even in, like, you know, you can have stealth viruses in like your tonsils and other stuff that under a lot of stress, and it takes a lot of stress, but when I eat fried food, immediately my entire throat swells up. I have my nodules, my tonsils, everything kind of swells up a little bit.
Yeah.
So I pretty much stay away. What's that?
It creates inflammation.
Creates inflammation.
That's basically what I was saying. It creates inflammation.
Yeah. So for me, I'm like the canary in the coal mine. I can see it immediately show up. But when I have it with the air fryer, which again is much more of a treat, not a regular thing in my diet, doesn't happen to that same degree. So great answer on that. All right, Mark. So I'm going to tee up our next question from Janine from Delaware, my home state.
Hi, Dr. Mark. My name is Janine Fusco-Lano from Delaware. Thanks for all you do. Do you recommend a company like Viome or Everly Well to find out what your triggers are in terms of inflammation and possibly weight gain? Thank you so much.
Well, Janine, thanks for your question. And I think the head of that question is really, should we be excited about self-testing? Should we be able to actually democratize testing and allow people to find out what's going on inside their bodies, whether it's through food allergy testing or stool testing or blood testing or saliva testing? And I strongly believe that people should be empowered with their own health data, that people are smart enough, capable enough, and with the right guidance and information, they can actually take this information and make meaningful changes to their life and health from it. And I really believe this strongly. And I've been trying to get people to own their data for a long time. And I've been doing diagnostic testing. And when I was in medical school, the doctor like never gave the results of the test to the patient. They said, oh, your lab tests are fine. Your cholesterol is fine. Your blood chemistry is fine. Your blood count is fine. I'm like, okay, but like, don't you think the patients should be able to have a recovery of their own report? So I really strongly believe that we should be empowered with our own health data. We should be able to actually self-test and self-diagnose whenever possible. However, there are a lot of companies out there producing all sorts of diagnostic tests that are getting a little ahead of themselves, I think. So there's food testing around genetics and nutrigenomics, there's food sensitivity or allergy testing, there's stool test companies out there, and they're all different. What I would say is, you know, as someone who's spent the majority of my life looking deeply into diagnostics and testing to find out what's going on with people, they're all over the place. So, you know, I give you an example. I have you know, we do split sampling on testing, but I have a lot of quantified self devices just to try them out. So I have an Oura Ring, I have an Apple Watch, I have an 8 sleep bed, I have, you know, different sleep apps, a sleep watch, I have all this stuff. And it's just amusing to me because I'll run them all at the same time on the same night and the same thing. I mean, I'll come up with like really different results. And I'm like, they're not so far off, but they're like, wow, this is interesting. You said I got 9 hours. You said I got 7 hours. You said my sleep was 80%. This one I said my sleep was 90%. I'm like, and so we really still in an era of fine tuning the diagnostics. And I would say these diagnostic tests should be used with caution. You shouldn't overinterpret them. Certainly if you want to do a sort of a food allergy or sensitivity test and you find something you want to try to elimination diet for a little while, fine. Some of the stool testing companies go a little far. They look at the microbiome itself, which is, you know, what are the bugs in there? And that's helpful, but you know, you've got up to 1,000 different bugs. They do all kinds of different things. It changes literally with every meal. So if you take your poop on Monday or take it on Wednesday, it's going to be different. Even we've done this, even within the same stool sample, you can sample different parts of the stool, which may represent different meals that you've had, and they're all different. So you can send literally the same poop from the same person on the same day to the lab, the same lab, and get 3 different results. So you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt and understand the context of the test and not overinterpret the test. I literally just went over somebody's test result, which told them to stop eating a lot of really healthy foods, which I just don't agree with. I think we're really not there in connecting the dots between, oh, you've got this particular bacterial profile in your gut. You shouldn't eat these 12 foods that actually are pretty healthy, like avocados or almonds or whatever. Like I can understand saying, well, don't eat, you know, processed food and don't eat sugar and, you know, that's fine. But I think it's a little bit of an overreach. I think we'll get there. We're learning. And it's not to say that we actually should ignore those results. It's just that we have to understand them in the context of our overall life and preferences and diet and health. So that's kind of how I see them. They're guideposts, but they're not, this is the gospel.
And I always feel, Mark, a good functional medicine doctor, and there's a lot of them that are out there, and a lot of them that also do like remote work with patients these days, they'll help you understand that the best case scenario from some of these tests, especially stool tests, is you're looking for not so much the individual food that works for you or doesn't. That's very hard to do unless if you have a specific allergy that's there, but most people are dealing with sensitivities and other stuff. They're going to more help you see, is there a lot of leaky gut, for example? Yes, they're looking at the trends and the themes. And if a lot of foods flag, especially in a particular category, as being triggering some sort of antibody response or immune response, then that might be an indication that, okay, there's leaky gut. We need to dig in a little bit deeper. We need to go in that area. So they're taking these themes and trends, not so much the individual foods. As you mentioned, it doesn't really feel like we're there.
Yeah. I mean, I would agree. And I would add to that, you know, the question is not what foods are you sensitive to or allergic to, is why are you so sensitive, and fix that. The goal isn't to create more restriction, but to create more resilience for people so they can tolerate a wider variety of foods without having the problem of making them sick. So I think that often gets missed. And I think these tests are overinterpreted and say, oh, I'm allergic to these things. No, you're not allergic. You're sensitive. And two, if you don't deal with the reason you're sensitive, you're not necessarily going to fix the problem just by eliminating the foods. So it's much more complex than that. And I think the testing kind of gives people a false sense of what's right or wrong and what to do and not do. But it's a much more deeper conversation about how do we heal our microbiome? How do we heal our gut? How do we prevent leaky gut? How do we actually reduce food sensitivities, not increase restrictions on our diet?
All right, Mark, our next question is from Melissa, who has a question about leaky gut, which we just talked about.
Hi, Dr. Hyman. So I was recently diagnosed with subclinical hypothyroidism and leaky gut. I was wondering if there are some ways in which I can heal my leaky gut other than just taking the right probiotics and removing food sensitivities from my diet. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Melissa, for your question about low thyroid function, what we call subclinical hypothyroidism, but I don't even think that's the right word, and how it connects to food sensitivities and leaky gut. So subclinical means you don't have symptoms, but there's something wrong. The truth is most people with low-grade thyroid problems do have symptoms, but they're just subtle. So low thyroid symptoms can be fatigue, depression, insomnia, constipation, muscle cramps, muscle twitching, you know, menstrual difficulties, high cholesterol, you know, all kinds of things that are just, we think are quote normal, but they're not. So I do think it's important for people to get it properly treated. The question is, what's the cause? Low thyroid function is a symptom. What's the cause? And it could be many things, right? It can be heavy metals. It can be environmental toxins, which are really common as triggers for autoimmune thyroid disease. But it also can be what's going on in your microbiome. And the truth is that the microbiome and leaky gut are really important in discovering what often the root causes are for autoimmunity. So if you have autoimmune thyroid disease, which is maybe the case, and by the way, I wrote a whole sort of ebook called The Ultra Thyroid Solution, which details exactly what you should do in terms of what diagnostic tests you should have, what the diets you should be on, what nutrients are important, what vitamins you should take, what thyroid you should take, how to properly look at things. And if the doctor, for example, isn't looking at your thyroid antibodies and looking at all the thyroid tests, including TSH, free T3, and free T4, they're not actually getting a full picture. And you may actually have sort of borderline elevated TSH, which means low thyroid, but if you have elevated antibodies, it means you have an autoimmune disease. And that's really important to know, because Hashimoto's, or the autoimmune disease that causes low thyroid function, is often caused by gluten. It can be caused by other things, by environmental toxins, but also caused by gluten. Now, how does that work? Well, gluten increases something called zonulin in the gut. And Alessio Fasano, who we've had on the podcast, who's one of the world's experts on celiac and gluten, is at Harvard. He first studied this phenomena in cholera, and discovered that in cholera, the body produces something called zonulin, which is this protein that causes the cells in the gut lining to come apart and creates leaky gut, which is where you get diarrhea and you can't, it creates a mess. And that's why people die from cholera. But he also found that gluten causes the same thing, not to the same degree, but it causes increases in zonulin, which drive the gut to become leaky. When the gut's leaky, basically you're allowing food proteins and food particles and bacterial toxins to leak across the lining of the gut, not go through the cells, but between the cells, and go right into the immune system, because 60% of the immune system is right there. And so I would say a fair bit of my patients with Hashimoto's or low thyroid have elevated gluten antibodies. Now, they might have full-blown celiac, or they might, but even if you don't have full-blown celiac and you have antibodies, it means there's something wrong. It means, one, you're exposed to gluten, two, you have a leaky gut, and three, that your immune system got pissed off and created antibodies, like due to COVID, right? So if you have any antibodies, there's a problem. Now, the question is it clinical? Are you having symptoms? Should you worry about it? Depends on your symptoms and overall degree of health. But for many people, it can be a big factor. So the key is, one, find out what the triggers are. Is it gluten? Is it something else? Two, rebuild your gut. Now, that involves, one, a program that I jokingly call the weeding, seeding, and feeding program. And in functional medicine, we call it 5R, but that's a little more complicated. But essentially, the idea is weed out all the bad stuff. Get all the foods that are triggering you, all the bad bugs out, small bacterial overgrowth, fungal overgrowth, parasites, whatever you got. And then seed the gut with healthy bacteria, probiotics, and so forth, and feed it with prebiotics and healing nutrients and polyphenols, things like zinc and omega-3 fats and vitamin A and vitamin D and all kinds of things that are important, glutamine, to help repair the gut lining. So when we do that weeding and seeding and feeding program, it literally can repair the leaky gut and you can be much more resilient. When I was really sick with chronic fatigue syndrome 20 plus years ago, I couldn't eat anything. I literally would eat anything. My stomach would blow up like a balloon. I would feel sick. I'd get dark circles under my eyes. I'd get rashes on my tongue, sores all over my body. And I was so reactive to the foods I was eating. And I had to eat like turkey, broccoli, and brown rice for like a year because I couldn't eat anything. And then I learned how to fix my gut. And I actually had to fix the mercury that was causing the leaky gut. Because like I said, there's a lot of things that can cause it. For me, it wasn't gluten. It was mercury. And until you figure out what the issue is, you can't fix it. And whether, for example, you might have hypothyroidism, and you might have leaky gut, but the cause might not be food sensitivities. It might be the result. Food sensitivities occur as a result of leaky gut. They can also, gluten can cause a leaky gut. So it's a little complicated, but so can other things, like mercury for me was causing a leaky gut that made me sensitive to all the foods. So you have to kind of go back and think about, how do you repair the gut? And we've had many podcasts about how to heal your gut, whether it's inflammatory bowel disease, whether it's irritable bowel, whether it's reflux. These are really common problems. In fact, the most common problems people go to the doctor with are gut problems. So the good news is we know how to do this now. Unfortunately, I just saw a patient yesterday, Drew, And it was very disturbing to me. He was a young 18-year-old man who suffered gut issues his whole life, was on lots of antibiotics, born by C-section, and was just always bloated, distended, constipated. And he was treated for bacterial overgrowth, which was the right thing to do because he had SIBO. But they just gave him antibiotics for 2 weeks, and they said, okay, see you later. And they didn't do any of the gut rebuilding protocol, which is really important because I see many people, even with full-blown celiac, that don't get fully better unless you repair their gut lining and repair the leaky gut, which isn't going to happen necessarily from just getting rid of gluten. You have to fix the whole microbiome.
You know, I want to give a shout out to one person on our network, Isabella Wentz, thyroid pharmacist, has a lot of free thyroid resources. You have your thyroid ebook, which is great. It hasn't been updated in a little bit of while. So like, you know, getting some of the latest information.
But it's still pretty
the foundations are there. The foundations are there.
Yeah, for sure.
The foundations are there. Mark, any program, you know, this is one of the challenges is that do you feel that gut protocols, when it comes to that weeding, seeding, and feeding, do you feel like there are any standard protocols that are available or books that go deep into it and kind of guide you through that process? Or is it so specific that really people need to work or think about working with a practitioner if they can?
That's a great question, Drew. I mean, I think the basics people can do. And I think, you know, we created an ebook called The Irritable Bowel Solution, which is really about using diet and a number of supplements to help with resetting your gut. And that works for a lot of people. And I can't tell you how many people who I've seen who I've never seen. I mean, who I've met, who I've never seen, who said, I followed the program. I did the 10-day detox. I did what you said, and I got better. And so a lot of people can get better without seeing a doctor. The problem is if you have something that needs to be treated, right? If you have heavy metals like I did, or if you have a parasite that needs to be treated, or you have really bad SIBO or SIFO, you need medication, you kind of need to work with a doctor. But for many people, you can use diet and herbs and lifestyle and have a huge impact on your gut health.
All right, Mark, our last question for today, who's asking about H. pylori?
Hi, I test positive for H. pylori. I've tried to clear it twice with antimicrobials under the supervision of my doctor, but it's not working. I still test positive. Is there another way?
H. pylori is a bacteria. It's really common that causes ulcers, but it can also cause, we call it dyspepsia or indigestion, heartburn, reflux. And this, I'll tell you a little bit about the backstory on it because it's kind of fascinating. Is this bacteria was seen for years by gastroenterologists on biopsies, and they thought I was just this kind of innocent bystander, and it wasn't really causing any of the GI symptoms that they were treating. And we used to think ulcers were stress and emotional issues. We used to cut the vagus nerve. I literally would cut the nerve to the stomach as part of the treatment in surgery to get rid of ulcers. And it was terrible. And we'd give people acid blockers and all kinds of stuff. And people would have to have surgery and bleeding. It was quite a scary disease. Then we discovered these drugs called PPIs or acid blockers and things like Tagamet and Pepcid and Zantac, which really helped. But there was a scientist, not even a scientist, actually, a doctor, a gastroenterologist named Barry Marshall from Australia, who had this crazy idea that this bacteria wasn't just a bystander, but it was actually the cause of ulcers called Helicobacter pylori. And he's like, look, I think this is the cause. And all of his colleagues made fun of him. They laughed at him. So he did an experiment, which seems really crazy, but it really worked. So he got a beaker full of this bacteria. He drank it first before he had one of his friends, who's a GI doctor, scope him. So they did a whole exam. They took pictures. They looked at his stomach. And then he drank this stuff. Then he waited a while. And then he got ulcers. And then
can I just interject 1 second? I feel like doctors back in the day were so gangster. They would do experiments like that.
That long ago. This was not even that long ago, Drew. This was like not even that long ago. This is like, you know, this is since I graduated from medical school. So it's not that long ago. Although that was a long time ago. and it wasn't like this was in 1905. This was like in, I think, the 80s and or 90s. And he basically drank the beaker, got the ulcer, got scoped again. And then he said, well, I'm going to give myself antibiotics. I'm going to cure it, and then my ulcer is going to go away. And he basically did that. He basically gave himself ulcers through this drinking the bacteria, and then he cured it with antibiotics. And this really fulfills the criteria for a causation using this concept of Koch postulates, which is a scientific term for basically this guy, the scientist Koch, who basically discovered how we prove that a bacteria caused an illness. So anyway, that was fascinating. And he ended up winning the Nobel Prize for this discovery. So since that time, now it's kind of standard of care. And we can test for H. pylori through multiple ways. We can test through a stomach biopsy, which they actually do when they do a scopes. When they do an endoscopy, they put a scope down your throat and they stick in your stomach and they can take a biopsy and they can send it to the lab and they can see it. Or you can do a breath test where you drink this liquid that the bacteria ferment, and you can actually do a breath test, which is probably the most accurate, to see if you have an active infection. Or you can do a stool antigen test where you're looking for the, like we now have antigen tests for COVID, it looks for the protein on the bacteria and can actually measure it, and that's a stool test. And lastly, there's antibody testing, which tells you that your body's creating antibodies against it, like antibodies to COVID. The problem with the antibody testing, it doesn't tell if you had an infection or you have an infection. So, your cells, immune cells have memory. That's why when you get the measles vaccine or when you get the COVID vaccine, your body remembers you had an exposure to that bacteria or that virus, and it prevents the infection by creating antibodies against it. So
That's how it should work.
That's how it should work, right. But the antibodies don't tell you if you have an active infection. So you have to know what you're doing. Now, you're asking, you've treated this with antibiotics, you've been tested. I don't know what tests you had. I don't know actually what happened. But what happens is often it's also contagious. So if your partner or your spouse or your lover, you know, has it, and they may be asymptomatic, and if you're in bed with them, you're going to get it again. So it may not be that you didn't cure it. It may be that you got reinfected with it. So you have to kind of figure out who's in your intimate circle and get them tested too. And they have to be treated too, or else you're going to get it to recur. Now, there are cases where it's recurrent. And it may be because the treatment protocols are not effective. And there's many different protocols, but it usually involves an antibiotic or two and an acid blocker. So it's kind of an important protocol to follow for 2 weeks, but it may not work. Just like antibiotics don't work for all infections, and it may be resistant, or maybe a strain of H. pylori that doesn't respond to this particular cocktail. So you might have to try two or three different cocktails of drugs to actually work. But I would encourage you to make sure you're not in the bed or making out with somebody who might have it and get tested first.
Mark, you know, I have a couple friends, dear friends of mine, who have struggled with H. pylori over years. And first, I want to even add that a lot of functional medicine doctors will tell people that I think the estimates are, you know, 40 to 60% of the population has H. pylori. Is that about accurate?
It's common. Yes. And it's not common. Everybody's symptomatic.
Right. Not everybody's symptomatic. So there are people that are symptomatic and there's people that are not. Now, the friends of mine over the years that have tried a lot of these standard protocols, antibiotics, and the H. pylori ends up coming back, in that process, they also end up destroying their gut. And they end up with a lot of other symptoms on top of the H. pylori symptoms.
That's a thing, right?
And that's a sort of a vicious cycle that I'd love to get your take on because it's like, okay, do I go back to the doctor and destroy my gut again? Or do I build up my resilience enough, change my diet, change my gut microbiome, so at least I can manage H. pylori a little bit better?
Yeah, I mean, I would say yes. And also that there are herbal formulas and regimens at work that I've used. So people don't want to take antibiotics, or I'll try it first. So mastic gum and certain kinds of zinc and certain kinds of herbs and licorice. And there's cocktails of stuff that actually have been effective in my clinical experience. It doesn't mean everybody will respond to them, but it's often worth trying the herbal forms of treatment first and seeing if that works.
And yeah, because that's a whole rabbit hole. We'll link to a couple articles. I'll go look up some that some of your peers or maybe even you have written, and we'll put them in the show notes to have additional resources for people who want to continue to dive further. Mark, those are our questions that we have here for today. So I'm going to pass it over to you to go ahead and close us out.
Dear, thank you so much. And everybody, thank you for your questions. I really love hearing from you. I love hearing the questions. I think there are answers that often are not available easily to people who are struggling with really chronic problems, whether it's Lewy body or low thyroid function or H. pylori or whatever you're struggling with. And I think that's the beauty of functional medicine, that it's really a map for how we navigate this territory of chronic illness that up to now we really haven't had a good map for. And that's really the purpose of the whole field of functional medicine, is to help people deal with these chronic issues. So I'm just really glad you've offered your questions, and I'd like to hear more of them, and I love answering them. So this is awesome. And thank you all for listening, because this has been really fun. And I just want to engage with you more and more. So please, please send your questions. And that's pretty much it for today's masterclass. And I hope you've enjoyed this episode of this masterclass on the Doctor's Pharmacy. If you love this episode, share with your friends and family. Leave a comment. Have you dealt with these conditions? Have you discovered ways that work? We always love to learn. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and we'll see you next week on the Doctor's Pharmacy. Hey, everybody, it's Dr. Hyman. Thanks for tuning into the Doctor's Pharmacy. I hope you're loving this podcast. It's one of my favorite things to do, and introducing you all the experts that I know and I love and that I've learned so much from. And I want to tell you about something else I'm doing, which is called Mark's Picks. It's my weekly newsletter, and in it, I share my favorite stuff, from foods to supplements to gadgets to tools to enhance your health. It's all the cool stuff that I use and that my team uses to optimize and enhance our health. And I'd love you to sign up for the weekly newsletter. I'll only send it to you once a week on Fridays. Nothing else, I promise. And all you have to do is go to drhyman.com/picks to sign up. That's drhyman.com/picks, P-I-C-K-S, and sign up for the newsletter. And I'll share with you my favorite stuff that I use to enhance my health and get healthier and better and live younger longer.
Hi, everyone. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Just a reminder that this podcast is for educational purposes only. This podcast is not a substitute for professional care by a doctor or other qualified medical professional. This podcast is provided on the understanding that it does not constitute medical or other professional advice or services. If you're looking for help in your journey, seek out a qualified medical practitioner. If you're looking for a functional medicine practitioner, you can visit ifm.org and search their Find a Practitioner database. It's important that you have someone in your corner who's trained, who's a licensed healthcare practitioner, and can help you make changes, especially when it comes to your health.